Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So tonight we're going to read from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 14, The Three Modes of Material Nature, text 4. I don't have my glasses here, so I'll just try and read it as well as I can. Sarva yonishu kunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradapita. Translation. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Perhaps we can repeat this translation responsibly. You can repeat after me, please. It should be understood, that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. In this verse, it is clearly explained that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the original father of all living entities. The living entities are combinations of the material nature and the spiritual nature. Such living entities are seen not only on this planet, but on every planet, even on the highest, where Brahma is situated. Everywhere there are living entities. Within the earth there are living entities, even within water and within fire. All these appearances are due to the mother, material nature, and Krishna's seed-giving process. The purport is that the material world is impregnated with living entities who come out in various forms at the time of creation according to their past deeds. Sarva yonishu kunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradapita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Om Vidyadhatmanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshunatamiyana Tasmaya Sri Gurudeva Sri Chidambaram Vishram Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Rupakam Vanchikalpa Kalubhyascha Kripa Sinyubhyedacha Panidhanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama very nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. This very famous verse. That all the living entities here in this material world, they're all dependent on Krishna. Aham Bija Prada Pita. He is the seed-giving father. Tasam Brahma Mahadyonya. The Brahma, or in this case it means the material nature, the great material nature. That is the Mahad Yoni, the source of birth, or literally you could say the great womb. The great womb, which is impregnated by the father. Who is Krishna? Hambija Pradapita. He is the seed-giving father of all living entities, from the very lowest, according to Vedic scriptures, there are 8,400,000 species of life, and the lowest is called the Indra Gopa germ. Of course, the modern-day scientists would say that there are many more than 8,400,000 species. But Vedic scriptures say 8,400,000, and we understand that many of what modern-day scientists count as independent species, they are just subcategories of greater species. So this figure of 8,400,000 we take as being accurate, very accurate, and actually very scientific, even more scientific than the modern-day scientists. Human beings, human species, we are the top 400,000 of that 8,400,000. So that means we are, the human species, being the top 400,000, we are the top 5% or so of all the species. And we can see how, for us, life in this material world is quite difficult. We have so many experiences of struggling here within this material world. I don't know about any of you. Are any of you struggling in material existence? Or are you all just having a fantastic time? I think some of you may be struggling, working hard from morning till night, men in the office, or the shop, or the factory, and the ladies working at home. What is it? A man may work from dusk to dawn, but a woman's work is never done. Isn't that the same? Is that right? She says that's right. Yes, so it's not easy. We're in the top 5%. Just imagine if you're in the top 5% of anything. Normally that means that you are exceptionally qualified. But we're in the top 5%. But we are struggling. So can you just imagine what it is like for the remaining 95%? It must be quite bad, actually, quite difficult. And just consider the last 5%. We are the first 5%. What is it like for the last 5%? Oh, it must be quite something. Extremely bad, really. But there is this one species, the Indra Gopa germ. And they are, according to Vedic literatures, they are actually the 8,400,000th species. So right from them, all the way up to Lord Brahma, who is living being, what to speak of species, but he is living being number one in the whole universe. the first living entity in the whole universe. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Abrahma Umanau Loka Puna Arvata Narajuna. From the highest planet in this universe down to the lowest, Abrahma, from the planet of Brahma, Bhuvanau Loka, down to the lowest planet, they're all places of misery. They're all places of difficulty. Every living entity is struggling. Even Lord Brahma is struggling sometimes, and he is living entity number one. We are reading in Durban, in our temple in Durban, in our Srimad Bhagavatam class, we are on to the seventh canto, the story of Lord Nrsimhadeva. And we have read how Hiranyakashipu, the great demon, who was killed eventually by Lord Nrsimhadeva, his plan was to overthrow Lord Brahma himself. So, even Lord Brahma is struggling sometimes. And he is living entity number one in the whole universe. So, it's very difficult actually. Even for us, even for Lord Brahma sometimes, even for us in the top 5% somewhere. So what about the Indra-Gopa germs? It's very difficult. Life in this material world is really very difficult. There are many, these 8,400,000 species, and they are existing everywhere within this material world. This is an interesting point explained in the Vedic literatures, that it is not just that this earth planet is inhabited. The scientists are fond of firing off space shuttles and other mechanical contrivances into outer space and trying to go to places like Mars. Of course, the last one I heard about 6 months ago, or some months ago, they lost it, right? Just lost it. One day they tried to tune in, are you there? No answer. Goodbye to $250 million. Oh, that's okay, we'll just make another one. The taxpayers are there. That's all they're good for, funding things like that. So I guess they're working on the latest one now. Their idea is go to Mars, and maybe they're going to find, I forget exactly what they're going to look for, but some signs of some super primitive, I mean like microbial on that level, some signs of traces of life like that. But the understanding given in the Vedic literatures is that all the planets are inhabited. That is why they are there. Just imagine if you were living in a block of flats and somehow you just got so caught up in that block of flats that you thought, this is the only place where there is life. And the other blocks of flats across the road, you thought, no, not possible. Be a little silly, wouldn't it? That's what the blocks of flats are there for. They're there to be inhabited. So what are these planets doing floating around in space? They are provided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be inhabited. He is not so foolish that he would create so many planets, this whole sophisticated arrangement that they float around the sun in some different orbits and, you know, very apparently well-timed, very well-balanced, so it's all very consistent, the seasons and so on and so forth. So he is not so foolish that he would make such a vast arrangement just for no purpose whatsoever. So the Vedic scriptures say that all the planets are inhabited. They're all different types of species. Like, for example, we mentioned that in the Vedic literatures it says there are 400,000 different types of human species. Srila Prabhupada was asked one time, how many of those 400,000, how many do we see on this planet? That's an interesting question, isn't it? How many are there really? Srila Prabhupada said, maybe 2,000. Then he thought, and he said, no, maybe just 1,000. So, but there are 400,000. Even if we say there are 2,000 different types of human species on this planet. 2,000, that means there's 398,000 that we have not had experience of. You know, we have white ones, like me, brown ones, like some of you, yellow ones, they say, like from Japan, I don't know if they're really yellow, but, you know, some red ones, apparently in the United States, the old red so-called Indians. You know. So, you know, but we don't have any green ones, do we? We don't have any purple ones. We don't have any blue ones. We don't have any multicolored combinations, different combinations, do we? So, but, according to the literatures, there are 400,000 different types of human species. So where are they? They're not here. But it's not that they don't exist. They do exist. But they're existing elsewhere. On other planets. Maybe even other universes. They're existing there. But just, we have not had experience of those. We think that the scientists are prone to think that living entities can only live. Jai Sri Srinathai Gaura Hari Sri Srinathai Sachi Sutta Kija. We are prone to think that living entities can only exist under certain conditions that we are familiar with. If it gets too cold, can't exist. If the gravity, if the pressure is too much, can't exist, or whatever. But here, if you heard nicely, you would have heard Srila Prabhupada said that there are living entities even within fire. We read, actually it was reported also in our Back to Godhead magazine, but the article came from something like National Geographic or Scientific American, some sort of fairly by scientific material, scientific terms, very authoritative type of literature. How? One time, maybe 25 years ago, 30 years ago, something like that, not long ago, there was one volcanic eruption under the sea somewhere, way down. So, of course, there's so much water there, it was deep down, and it couldn't just, as happens sometimes when there's volcanic eruptions above the water on land. There's very spectacular blast of fire and so on. This had all the water on top of it. But still it was a volcanic eruption and superheated water came up. Because of the presence of the other water all around it, it couldn't turn into vapor. It remained water, but it was superheated to temperatures something like 400 or 500 degrees centigrade. So normally, of course, water starts to evaporate approaching 100. As soon as you get to 100, it really just evaporates. And it'll hardly ever get up to 104 or something like that. It'll just evaporate and then become gas. So, but in this case, you have the superheated water, 400, 500 degrees centigrade, and it was still water. So the scientists went out, and they took some of this water and somehow or other stored it as this, in this form of superheated water. And what did they find? They found that in this water, hot, hot water, there were some living entities. And they were living quite happily. They were reproducing. And life was going on in their terms at a temperature of 400 degrees centigrade in the superheated water. Then the water started cooling down. They found by the time the water got down to about 300 degrees centigrade, these little living entities started dying. The numbers started reducing. By the time it got down to about 200 or 220 or 230 or something, they're all dead. It was too cold. Too cold. Yeah. But you put us, you know, we had a temple out at Mulder's Drift. Some of you may remember that. And one of our devotees there, he was a bit of a health fanatic. He built a sauna. So we would go and have saunas occasionally. And sometimes, you know, the temperature would be normally about 80 degrees centigrade. After you'd been in there half an hour at 80 degrees, oh, it's pretty warm. Once we had up to 125 degrees centigrade, it was really hot. It was awfully hot. It was too hot. Stinging. You couldn't stay there. 5 minutes, you couldn't stay there. So, just imagine living in 400, 500 degrees centigrade. Oh, it's unimaginable. So normally if we say 400 degrees centigrade, 500 degrees, then we would think, no chance of life. But there it was. So it is not that this planet is the only place where there is life. The fact is that all the planets are inhabited, but they all have different atmospheres. And the living entities living there are living in with different bodies under different conditions. And we, who are only able to really perceive things within certain parameters, then we cannot even perceive what is really going on there. Yes. So to us we think, oh, uninhabited, just some rocks floating around in space. But it's not like that. Krishna's not so stupid that he would just make some big, big planets and this whole extremely sophisticated arrangement of them floating around in space just to waste his time. Why would he bother doing that? And this one little planet Earth, it's inhabited. And we have all these problem cases running around on this planet, making a whole mess of it. And that's the best he can do. It doesn't say much for God, does it? Yes. So, it's like that. There are living entities, even on the sun. There, what to speak of 400 or 500 degrees? Oh, it's much hotter than that. The whole place is just fire. Yes, but here in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Imam Vivasvate Yogam. That previously I spoke this science of yoga, Bhagavad Gita, to Vivasvan. Imam Vivasvate Yoga. Back in a previous age, long time ago. So who is this Vivasvan? He is the presiding deity of the sun planet. Yes. Every planet has a presiding deity. So there is a presiding deity of this planet Earth, Bhumi, Mother Earth. And she, this planet, is not exactly her body, but she is in tune with what is going on all over this planet. And she is sensitive, actually, to what is going on this planet. It's described that before Krishna appeared, there were many demoniac kings, and they were harassing each other and harassing everyone. And it's described, right at the beginning of the 10th canto, one of their favorite practices was marching their armies, making military displays, marching up, marching down, marching around. You know, the grand old Duke of York, you know that song? He marched them up to the top of the hill, and he marched them down again. So, they were just marching their soldiers up and down, and up and down, just showing off. And all these soldiers, you know, they are stamping and stamping, marching. So, the Bhagavatam says there that this was causing pain to Bhumi. It was hurting her. Not that this planet is exactly her body, but she is in contact with the whole planet and is sensitive to what is going on the planet. So, it was causing her pain. Therefore, she approached Lord Brahma. Please help me. Relieve me of this pain. You know, an interesting thing I read, it's in the Bhagavatam, it's in the 8th canto, Bali Maharaj's story. It said there that Mother Earth can tolerate almost anything, but there is one thing, one type of thing that Mother Earth cannot tolerate. You know what that is? A liar. Mother Earth cannot tolerate liars. She doesn't like them. Just like Krishna, it is said that Krishna says, in regard to his devotees, we're all trying to be devotees or become devotees, something like that. So we're trying, but we have many shortcomings. Sometimes we're trying, but we make some mistake. Something goes wrong. We do something silly. And what a shame. So, Krishna says that with my devotees, I can tolerate anything, almost anything. It's not such a big thing to Krishna if his devotee makes a mistake, something goes wrong, a little bit of chaos every now and then. It's not such a big thing for Krishna, he says. Krishna says that with my devotees, I can tolerate almost anything, but I cannot tolerate pride. Krishna says, in my devotees, I cannot tolerate pride. He can tolerate so many things. But if the devotee thinks, yes, look at me, oh, I'm such a great devotee, aren't I? I'm doing very well. By my mercy, so many good things are happening. Then Krishna thinks, ah. Then you get into trouble. The royal order of the boot of Maya, to wake us up a little. Anyway, the thing is that there are living entities everywhere, even on the sun planet. That Vivasvan, who Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to previously, he is very highly evolved being. He is far beyond us. He's controlling the sun planet, actually. He's far beyond us. We can hardly control our minds and our senses. He's controlling the whole sun planet. So he's a very big living entity. All over there are living entities. They are actually described as sarva-gata, all-pervading. They're all-pervading. They are everywhere. Within the material world, you will find living entities everywhere. So, Krishna is saying here, Tasam Brahma Mahadyonya Aham Bija Prada Pita. All his children. Sometimes we see that there's some parents, they have a child who has some serious defect, physical or psychological even, some serious defect. But nice parents, they don't think that, useless child, throw it away. I mean, some nasty parents, they think like that actually. But nice parents, real parents, they don't think like that. They don't. They are very concerned and affectionate and compassionate upon any child they may have. Not just that one child is very intelligent, very well organized. The other child is a little baby, can't do anything, totally dependent. So they think, oh, the intelligent child is very good. But this little baby who's fully dependent on us, oh, this is taking so much energy, so much of our time. We don't like this. No. Any proper parent will be equally affectionate to all the children in the family. So Krishna says, Aham Bija Prada Pita, I am the seed-giving father of all the living entities. So we should know that by the same, according to the same standard, that Krishna is equally affectionate and equally compassionate on all his children. Not just the big intelligent human beings, but the little ants or the animals or the plants or the birds, that he doesn't care about them. They can just, anything can be done to them. Not like that at all. Aham Bija Prada Pita. He is the father. He is the great father. So he is affectionately inclined to all living entities. So we should respect all living entities. Sometimes people ask us, do we like or do we dislike? Sometimes people think we dislike the demigods, Shiva, Brahma, Durga, and so on. Actually, the Vaishnavas, the devotees, they want to speak of respecting the demigods. They offer respect even to an ant. There's a very nice story in Chaitanya Charitamrita of Shivananda Sen, great devotee, personal friend of Lord Chaitanya. He was leading a group of devotees, taking them on a tour from Bengal to Jagannath Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya. Somehow along the way, one dog came. And he was a very friendly dog. And he became attached to Shivananda Sen. So Shivananda Sen took him under his wing, basically. He would see that he got fed. And he would make sure that the dog was around and in the right place and coming along with the group, because they were walking. And when they came to a river, they'd have to take a boat and they'd have to pay money. So he would pay money for the dog. Just some stray dog that walked up to him a few days before. But he would pay money for the dog. So then they were approaching Jagannath Puri. It was just one day's walk away. Or the next day they would arrive, like that. Somehow, some incident occurred. Shivananda Sen, as the leader of the group, he had to drop everything and take care of that particular incident. And he was not there to see that the dog was fed. He only came back late at night when they sorted out whatever happened. So the dog was there waiting. No food was coming. So the dog, being a dog, he left to find food. So Shivananda Sen came back late at night and couldn't find the dog. And he thought, oh, something like this must have happened. Next morning they're looking for the dog. No dog. Satan came upset. And he was asking, didn't you feed the dog? What happened? But they had neglected that because he was not there. So anyway, he was disappointed, but they carried on. And then later that day, they arrived in Jagannath Puri. They went to see Lord Chaitanya. And there with Lord Chaitanya, who was there but the dog? The dog was with Lord Chaitanya. So, Shivananda Sen, you know what Shivananda Sen did? He went up to the dog, he bowed down and offered his obeisances and apologized to the dog. Yes. The dog, Lord Chaitanya was throwing coconut pulp to the dog, and the dog was catching it. And Lord Chaitanya was telling the dog, chant Krishna Krishna, and the dog was chanting Krishna Krishna, and then Lord Chaitanya would throw some coconut pulp. But the point we're getting at is that the devotees, they are kind. What to speak of to the demigods, respectful, but even to the ants, even to the dogs, yes, respectful to all living entities, because Tasam Brahma Mahadyonir Aham Bija Pradapita. They know, these are my brothers and sisters. They may be considerably less capable than me in many respects, but they're still my brothers and sisters. In many respects, not all respects, don't underestimate the animals. Srila Prabhupada, one time, there was an incident. Srila Prabhupada, I think it was in Jaipur, maybe in Vrindavan, and one devotee was cooking Prabhupada's lunch, making chapatis, roti. And one monkey came, and he was just sort of minding his business, very nonchalant at this. Nothing's happening. Suddenly, he grabbed a chapati and was gone. And the lady who was making the chapati, she was watching the monkey make sure. But still, he got the chapati. So Srila Prabhupada said, just see, he was more intelligent than you. You were trying to stop him getting the chapati. He got the chapati. He beat you. You know, there's a famous joke in Russia that up somewhere in northern Siberia, which is a very desolate place, there are some people, and they're kind of very, you could say, rustic, if you know what I mean, or primitive, you could say. And they have people sort of mock them. And there's one joke, that one of these people was playing chess with an Arctic bear. So one of the regular Russians came by and said, what are you playing chess with a bear for? You're stupid. You don't play chess with a bear. You're stupid. And I said, I am not stupid. I'm beating him 2-1. Anyway, don't underestimate the animals. In certain respects, they're more advanced than us. Yes. So they're all living entities are children of Krishna, they're our brothers and sisters. So we have to be kind to them. At least we have to be respectful. And actually we should be kind. And try and help them become Krishna conscious. We should try to help them become Krishna conscious. We can give them prasadam. We can let them hear the holy names. So like this, we should learn how to relate to all the living entities very nicely, understanding they're our brothers and sisters, and not exploit the living entities. If we do like this, then Lord Krishna, he will be very pleased with us if we can be merciful to other living entities. At least if we can be respectful, and preferably we can actually be merciful to them by helping them to become Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna. You have a comment or a question? So, we'll just briefly try and answer three questions here. How many times was the Bhagavad Gita spoken? Once to Arjuna, once to the sun god, to anyone else? Actually, Bhagavad Gita has been spoken innumerable times. Yes, so many times. There's no figure given. There are so many universes. There's an unlimited number of universes practically. In each universe, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken from time to time. Not just one time, but from time to time. There are the phases of creation of the universe, then maintenance, and then destruction after a while. And then later on, there's creation again. So this is cyclical, it's going on and on, this has been happening. There was no time when this was not happening. Eternal. So, in each universe, during each creation, there are millions of universes. In each universe, in each creation, there's been an unlimited number of creations. Bhagavad Gita has spoken. So how many times is that? So many times. Many, 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 many times. But these times, they are specifically referred to in our Vedic scriptures. So these are more relevant to us, and particularly when Krishna spoke to Arjuna 5,000 years ago. That is most relevant to us. Why does Lord Shiva have a moon on his head? Now there's a story behind that. I can't remember the details. I know why there's the Ganges coming out of his head. You want to know about that, I have to tell you that. But the Ganges, when Lord Vamana put his toe through the top of the universe and water came through from the causal ocean, that was the Ganges. But it was going to come through and just destroy the universe. So Lord Shiva caught it in his hair, and he's releasing it gradually. So that is the Ganges. The moon on his head, see, we don't focus on Lord Shiva so much. Not that we have anything against him, but we cannot focus on everyone. You know, there are unlimited incarnations of Krishna. We cannot focus even on all of them. It's just not possible. Our brains are too small. So, we focus particularly on Krishna, then certain others we focus to some degree. Lord Chaitanya, of course, we focus on a lot. Lord Ram to some degree. Lord Narasingadeva to some degree. To a lesser degree, Lord Vamana, Lord Varaha, Lord Karna, like that. But there's unlimited incarnations just of Krishna before we start getting into Lord Shiva, who is like kind of a little bit different again. So, forgive us. We don't know everything about Lord Shiva. We don't even know everything about Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada one time, you may have heard me say this. Actually, I was in England. It was in the 1970s. We were on traveling Sankirtan, distributing Prabhupada's books. One morning, we listened to one lecture tape, Srila Prabhupada lecturing. In that lecture, Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna is so wonderful, he's the son of Mother Yashoda, we all have a personal relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada said, just try to understand Krishna and your relationship with him. So we thought, yes, good, we'll try. Next day we listened to another tape, another lecture. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna, He is within every atom. He is all-pervading. And He is omniscient. And He is omnipotent. He is so great. And we are so small. Our brains are so small. Don't try to understand Krishna. So, we can't fully understand Krishna, but we can understand Him just enough to know Him, and then that's enough. Yes, that can be eternally satisfying. But Lord Shiva, why He has a moon on His head, maybe you should ask someone who worships Lord Shiva. They could perhaps give you an answer. Could you tell us who was the father of the three Pandu kings, Dhritarashtra, somebody, and Pandu? Who's the other one? Vidura, isn't it? Yeah. Who's the father? Vyas. Vyas is the father. Yes, Srila Vyasadeva is the father. You know, he was actually the brother of the husband. Am I right? I think so. He was actually the brother of the husband, but the husband was not capable of producing children, so he, the brother, was asked to impregnate his brother's three wives. So he agreed to do that. So he went, but Vyas, he was very extraordinary looking. You could say very ugly looking, actually, by, you know, bodily standards. So when he approached the first wife, she closed her eyes. He just looked too horrible. She closed her eyes. So her son was Dhritarashtra. He was born blind, because she closed her eyes. The second wife, she was just so frightened, she just panicked. She turned white. So Pandu was born white. White, white. But then there was, the third was actually a maidservant, and she was, you know, more able to sort of handle the situation. So a very good and like very normal and very qualified son was born to her. That was Vidura. But the father, in all cases, was Vyas himself. Okay, let's see. Regarding the 400,000 human species, is it purely a physical category? Or does consciousness also feature as a means of grading the human species? Well, it's a combination, but, you know, basically different species, in basic terms, means the physical form. Within the physical forms, though, I mean, within a certain given species, you'll have some who are higher in consciousness, and then you'll have some who are lower in consciousness. That we see. That we see. In all, you know, like on a sort of racial basis, if you want to put it that way, in very simple terms, some people in this race are very nice, some others are not. In all races, it's like that. But the human species, in general, there are certain parameters of consciousness, actually, in like broad parameters. And when the consciousness gets too low, even though they may have a human body, but technically they may not be considered human. They may be considered what is called in Sanskrit purusha pashu, a man animal. Yeah. That they have a human form. But in terms of consciousness, which of course naturally manifests in their activities, then actually they're living, their consciousness is like, and they're living like animals in fact. So they're technically considered human beings, but in real terms, they're considered to not really be actual human beings. Last question. Sivananda Sen was glorified for showing compassion and kindness to a dog. Yet another Vaishnava, Bharat Maharaj, his affection for a deer led to his downfall. Please explain the difference. Yes, well, that's an interesting point, but it's a fairly simple point. Sivananda Sen, he was very concerned about the dog, but he didn't become totally materially, you could say, infatuated with the dog and just bewildered by the dog. His attitude was very Krishna conscious. Because as we said, we are meant to be compassionate to all living entities. We're meant to try to help all living entities become Krishna conscious. So, but we are not meant to just become completely materially attached to other living entities and become absorbed in thinking of them in just bodily, mundane terms. Then we'll fall down and we'll become like that ourselves. Yeah. So it depends on whether you're giving the association or taking the association, really. If you're giving your association to a dog, the dog will be benefited if you're a devotee. But if you're taking association from the dog, in other words, you are sort of surrendering to the dog in a sense, then you'll become a dog, maybe. You'll become degraded. That's a fact. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for listening very patiently. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.